Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon on the East Coast, good morning everywhere else in the country, and welcome to another edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, the 2015 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Final Review Show. As this match went from regulation into extra time, 1-1 draw, and it was settled in the round of penalties, 7-6. The Philadelphia Union hosting their second consecutive U.S. Open Cup Championship Final match, taking on Sporting Kansas City, and Sporting Kansas City would go on to win their third title in 4 years, their second Open Cup Championship in 4 years. My fault when I've said 2 out of 3. I keep forgetting about that MLS Cup Championship in 2013, but you gotta say for this match, I thought it was a well-played match. Obviously, a lot of back and forth in this game. A lot of back and forth in this championship final as Philadelphia gets the opening goal around the 23rd minute by Sebastian Letou. Of course, he scored the winner in the semifinals at PPL Park against the Chicago Fire. And probably many in Philadelphia are thinking, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the one. They're going to get to win their title in regulation. But the Hungarian international, Christian Namath, in the 65th minute, what a curling shot that was. My God. That was an unbelievable shot that I saw from him. And that leveled the score. And then between some of these goals, of course, tons of yellow cards. Tons of yellow cards between goals before Letou's by Michael Lahoud in the 21st minute. And then Letou scored. Then you had Kevin Ellis, who got booked for Sporting Kansas City in the 29th. And then you start the second half. Tranquilo Barneta gets booked in the 58th minute. Namath scored. And then it's all bookings on Sporting Kansas City by Jordan Quintilla in the 71st. Matt Beisler in the 86th. And then full-time whistle blew by Ted Uncle. So we go into extra time. And it was all bookings for Sporting Kansas City. Paolo Nagamura in the 94th minute. Graham Zuzzi in the 104th minute, and then Chance Myers in the 106th minute, and then all of a sudden it goes straight to the penalty shootout. Now, I have to say that I think Sporting Kansas City got lucky when Jordan Quintanilla got booked in the 71st minute, because I will say this right now, that looked like a red cardable offense. I have to say it. I know some are probably wondering on the Sporting KC side, how can you say that's a red card offense? The way the tackle came from behind and the way it happened, and I understand if some of you would be disagreeing with me on this, but the truth of the matter is that Ted Uncle did not officiate this match evenly for both sides. And for some of you would be saying, well, you know, that could have been a harsh red on Quintanilla, the way he tackled his man down, but the truth of the matter is, that could have been a red card regardless, even if it wasn't even officiated game by Ted Uncle. Look, I am not saying that I was expecting a sending off in this final, because I think the referees are trying not to influence the game that much. They don't want to be a figure of importance. I think Uncle is trying to officiate the game as evenly as he could, and even though he didn't, it didn't escalate to a side losing a man for the rest of the match because, like I said, that could have been a red card offense. Could have been. I'm not saying it was. It could have been in the eyes of Ted Uncle, and Sporting Kansas City could have been down to 10 men. So all I can say is that I think Sporting Kansas City got away with one, and they were fortunate because it was yellow and not red. And obviously, anyone who's on a yellow card in this game, Uncle, you know, you saw the discipline coming in very, very well. And all you can say is that for them and for Philadelphia as well, no one got sent off. So that, in my opinion, is a good thing. Now, let me throw this scenario out here. And for some of you that are new to MLS recently, you know, I've seen a lot of shenanigans back in the day when it was MLS 1.0, back in the early, or shall I say the early years of MLS, the late 90s into the early 2000s. See, when MLS got started, we would have shootouts to see who was going to get the point. Now, these were called, of course, the shootout wins, the shootout losses, whatever you see from the NHL these days now. Obviously, they're trying to fix that with this 3-on-3 overtime situation. But here's the thing. When DC United had two keepers, they had their starter and they had the backup. And I guess during training, the backup would be the best penalty shootout stopper that they have, the specialist, they would call him. And his name was Mark Simpson. So back then, it wasn't a, you go to the ball, you go to the spot, and then you convert it. No, this was, you had a shot clock running down. And you had to run from a certain point outside the 18-yard box, outside the area. And you ran it in, and you had to find a way to beat the keeper. And the keeper was allowed to jump off his line to try and stop the shootout attempt. And, of course, many people were saying, you know, we don't need this type of a gimmick in this league anymore. You know, just go back to what it is. 3 points for a win. Excuse me. Sorry about that. 3 points for a win and a point for a draw and nothing for a loss. It was trying to attract the those that are not into the game and try to make them, you know, interested in MLS. Well, obviously, common sense prevailed. And in the 2000 season, we had the clock going up. We didn't have the two 45-minute halves clock going down. They still do that in college, in the NCAA. I hope they change that. They don't do the waving of the timeout, put their hands together to stop the clock to allow a substitution, or an injury timeout of some sort. So, in my opinion, I'm glad that hasn't continued on here in MLS. But anyway, back in the day, you had the starting goalie for DC United, and then when it got closer to the shootout, there would be a timeout allowing Mark Simpson to sub in for the starter who played the entire match, and then he would be there for the penalty shootout. Now, this, and I have to say this, is that it was weird to see this situation happen between Andre Blake and John McCarthy. Look, John McCarthy, who had a great run in the Open Cup, I was shocked to see Andre Blake starting this match. And he is the future of the Union as it comes to a goalkeeper. But if you're going to pull that off, and I understand it's all strategy, I understand it's all about trying to position yourself to win the match, to win a cup, to win a championship. I'm sorry. That is considered, in my opinion, Bush League. I understand why Jim Curtin did it. and that's fine. But I consider that to be Bush League because Andre Blake deserved to be in goal for the penalty kick shootout. Andre Blake deserved to be in goal for that penalty kick shootout and to get the opportunity to say, I'm the one that got the Philadelphia Union a championship. I'm the one that the Philadelphia Union believes in. I'm the one. If you wanted McCarthy to be in the penalty kick shootout, you know what then? You should have started him from the beginning of the match through regulation, through extra time, and when you got to penalties, then you can say, John McCarthy, he's the one that got you into a championship. And you know what? I understand he saved a penalty. I understand he saved Christian Namath's penalty in the third round of the shootout. But I'm sorry. I still call it Bush League. I thought Andre Blake, who played a hell of a match in goal for Philadelphia, along with Melia, I thought Andre Blake should have stayed in goal, should have stayed and play in the penalty kick shootout. He's the one that should have gotten the plaudits. And even though McCarthy didn't have a good game in goal to make the stop, but the truth of the matter is this, I did not like it. I didn't like it. And if this is going to happen, you know, every single time there's a cup final, whatever league it's in, whatever country it's in, you know, if it's going to be a cup final for, you know, FA Cup final for penalty kick shootout specialist, you know what? Start the guy and let him finish the job. I am sorry. I didn't like it. It rendered and it reeked MLS 2.0, or shall I say 1.0, and this was ridiculous. I understand its strategy, and that's fine. You know the whole Eddie Gavin thing, you know, that happened when he subbed in because, you know, they had a substitution to use, and they didn't want to lose Tim Howard, of course, a goalkeeping sub, so they had to sub in Eddie Gavin as a goalie to keep Tim Howard in the match because I think they were down to 10 men or something like that in that regular season match against DC. And then when the ball was out of play, Tim Howard and Eddie Gavin had to switch places so Tim could go back and goal. I didn't like the rule either. It was a weird one. It gave the Metro Stars back in the day an overtime victory in the full 3 points, and that's when it was golden goal. But the truth of the matter is this. I didn't like that rule either. I thought it was Bush League as well, and this was done by the league. And the league realized, hey, we can't do this anymore, and they made the right decision. So I'm sorry. I found it to be Bush League. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And now, after a great clinic of penalty kick taking, I mean, what a clinic. Everyone except for the third round and the last round on Philadelphia that Andrew Wenger missed. What? That was awesome. That was absolutely brilliant. The two converted. File Harbor went. Noguera converted. Dwyer converted. Or Maurice Adu took a terrible penalty, and he got deservedly so. Christian Namath got stopped on a great job by McCarthy, and then it kept on going with Barnetta, who made it 3-2 after four rounds. Matt Beasler, 4-4, 3-3 after four rounds. Connor Casey made it 4-3 after five. Alo Nagamura made a 4-4 after 5. Michael LaHood made it 5-4. Graham Zuzzi made it 5-5 after 6. Raymond Gaddis, that was a well-placed penalty. That was awesome. Loved Raymond Gaddis right there. Listen, I love Gaddis. I love how he's been brought up and everything. I loved how he has done everything good. But I got to tell you guys, it was unbelievable. And then all of a sudden, Kevin Ellis makes it 6-6 after 7. And then we go to the eighth round. and Andrew Wenger gets stopped by Melia, and then Jordan Quintanilla stepped up and took the penalty and gave the Sporting Kansas City their second Open Cup title in 4 years, their third overall if you count them as the Kansas City Wizards back in the early 2000s. That was fantastic. And this match ended 1-1 after regulation, after extra time, 7-6 on penalties after 8 rounds. 7-6 for Sporting Kansas City. Here's what we're going to do first, ladies and gentlemen. Usually I try to do the runners up first, and then we'll go to the winners next. We're going to do the winner first, and that's going to be a taped conversation with Mike Kuhn of Down the Byline blog from Sporting Kansas City. Kevin Kincaid of CBS Philadelphia could not make it all of a sudden, as everyone knows. We'll get into that, of course, in this show. Nick Sakevich has been sacked by Philadelphia Union, and he is no longer CEO of the Union. So without any further ado, here is Mike Kuhn of Down the Byline blog.
Once again, Daniel Feuerstein here, the American Soccer Show, as we talk about that great U.S. Open Cup Final Championship game that was played at PPL Park this past Wednesday, Sporting Kansas City, their third Open Cup title all the way back to the early 2000s when they were the Kansas City Wizards. Joining me to discuss this once again, it is Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline blog. Kuhn, thanks again for joining me and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
That's right, it is, because my goodness, two Open Cup titles within these 3 years, of course 3 and 4, when you're talking about Sporting Kansas City not only winning that MLS Cup back in 2000, and I believe it wasn't that far away in 2013, but an Open Cup title in 2012, and then in 2015 right now, of course, going into penalties against the Philadelphia Union and winning it.
Yeah, we can't do anything but win in penalties lately, which doesn't do a great job for my heart, but it fills a trophy case.
Oh, it really does. And I have to say, I mean, isn't that strange to see what's been going on? I mean, you know, penalties to win the MLS Cup back in 2013, and you're winning in penalties here in 2015 for the Open Cup Championship. No Jimmy Nielsen this time, you know, to do his tongue wagging, but, you know, I have to say Melia did a very good job in goal, especially during that penalty round shootout. I mean, you got a lot of faith, or Vermees has a lot of faith in Melia.
No, absolutely. Melia did a very good job for us last night. I mean, he had the one mistake not coming off his line quick enough on Latou's goal, but other than that, he was very solid for us and came up huge for us in the PK shootout when we needed it.
Yeah, he really did, and he came up big. I will say this, and I think you can tell that it was telegraphed by Maurice Adu on the third penalty attempt. That was a very poor penalty, and if Melia wasn't going to stop that one, you know, there's an issue there that could have been a Philadelphia championship right there if Melia did not make that stop.
No, absolutely. I mean, and going to the PKs for a second, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a PK clinic put on like there was from the other 15 shooters that mm-hmm. didn't miss their penalties in the game. I mean, it seemed like every other one was going up into the roof of the net, up into the upper 90, leaving McCarthy and Mealy with virtually no chance on the majority of those PKs. I mean, both Philadelphia and Kansas City, everybody was just blasting their shots in. They, as I said, it was just a PK clinic in the final.
Oh, it really was. I got to give Philadelphia tons of credit. Great chances to take at the spot. I mean, Latou was fantastic. Nogueira was fantastic. Barnetta, Casey, Lahoud. I will admit, I thought Gattis might have missed, but that was a sheer moment of like quick smarts right there, because I thought I was going to blast it, and he just slotted it inside the near post.
Yeah, no, he caught Melia leaning the same way Quintilla kind of caught McCarthy on the winning PK. You if you watch it, you can see Quintilla just kind of change his mind just a little bit right as he's about to strike it, because he caught McCarthy leaning a little bit to his left and just calmly slotted it into the other corner, basically.
Yeah, very true, and a great goal by Namath, of course, in the 65th minute to level the match at one in regulation. That was a well-taken strike. And, you know, I've mentioned this to Pascarella, the assistant coach of Sporting Kansas City. If it's not Namath, it's Benny. And if it's not Benny, it's Dom in this Open Cup run. And these three guys have been absolutely brilliant when they have taken a real solid chance at goal. And Namath was the one that leveled it all in the 65th.
Absolutely. Those three have been huge in producing goals for us this year. I mean, that had to be a priority for Vermes after last year when, I mean, Dwyer went off and hit the 20s in goals scored, but the next highest score for the team was Grand Zuzi with 5. So finding other goal scorers to complement Dwyer was certainly a need in the offseason, and Vermes is getting a career year out of Failhaber, and Namath is probably, outside Giovinco, probably newcomer of the year in MLS.
I would agree with you right there. I think Namath is just as at the same level as Giovinco. I don't know, you know, about the goal-scoring opportunities that have been converted more than Giovinco has, but I agree with you about Namath, the Hungarian international, just putting on not just a clinic, but, you know, providing some serious depth and great help for, as you've said, for Dom and for Benny.
Definitely.
Yeah. Were you a little nervous in this one because, you know, 6 players being booked, Kevin Ellison 29th, Quintilla, I mean, that he's lucky to get sent off because Uncle could have pulled out the red card on that challenge. I mean, it wasn't red card worthy, but it could have been if Uncle thought that was beyond excessive.
Oh, definitely. There were a couple challenges that I thought Casey could have gotten a player sent off for. Even the challenge that Myers had on Blake, cleating him in the head. I thought Myers was going to get sent off for that. But I mean, Uncle really just called a really, really odd game last night. He was letting stuff go that I thought he would have called, and then calling stuff I thought he'd let go. It just very, very inconsistent in the calls last night. And I don't know if that was partly because of the conditions. He wasn't sure exactly what was a foul and what was slipping on the field. But it just wasn't a great ref game for either side.
No, it wasn't. Once again, you know, you'd like to see what Peter Walton is trying to do here with these referees in the pro department in MLS. And all I can say is that I think he needs more work to do because whatever they've learned about the laws of the game, I just think it just hasn't been good enough and more needs to be done. But outside of that, let me ask you this, and I don't know if you've been following the league since it's in 1996, but do you remember the days of Mark Simpson? He would always be subbed in when MLS regular season games used to go to that strange running in shootout mode with the shootout clock, you know, and you always see Mark Simpson subbing in because he would be the best penalty take goalie and he would sub in for the regular starting keeper. Remember those days? Do you remember those days?
I don't remember that specifically with Simpson, but I certainly remember the old shootout days.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah, because he would come in when DC United, and even when he was playing for New England at the time, when Walter Zenga used to be the manager coach of the Revolution, he would start the match, but when it got close enough that it was going to be going to the shootout, he'd sub himself out, so he brings in Simpson, so that Simpson can play goal and win the shootouts.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you feel when Andre Blake got subbed out for McCarthy? I mean, look, in this day and age, here's my feeling. I felt it's Bush League because if you wanted McCarthy at the start of everything, then you should have started him all the way into the shootout. I know it's all hindsight, 2020, whatever, but the point is this. If you were worried you're going to get into a shootout, have him play the entire freaking game. Don't all of a sudden yank Andre Blake and, you know, throw McCarthy in there. I understand it's all strategy and whatever, and that's fine. But I felt that's Bush League these days. What's your opinion?
I mean, the call on that doesn't bother me. I mean, I thought it was a smart move in regards to how McCarthy has done on PK so far in the tournament. I don't necessarily think that Blake would have done poorly. I thought Blake had a very solid game. I mean, he made the saves when he needed to, and he really had no shot at Namath's goal. So, I mean, I thought that Blake probably deserved to do the PKs, but I wasn't overly surprised with it, and neither really was Kansas City. From what I was reading after the game, Kansas City was expecting McCarthy to get the start in the game. They've been studying his PK preferences all week in the run up to the game.
Well, that's good. That's a great job actually by Peter Vermees, knowing what's in front of him, and of course if McCarthy was going to start or subbing into the match, which what happened. I feel it's more Bush League these days than it was back in the day. I mean, still, Sporting Kansas City was able to get the necessary penalties converted. Of course, one more than Philadelphia. Great job by Melia on Wenger. And, I mean, Wenger didn't look comfortable at all. You felt that Wenger was going to be the next candidate to have a zero next to his name on the penalty shootout scoring sheet.
No, absolutely. Wenger just didn't look confident as he was walking up to it. Just you know, when you're watching the guys walk up, you can tell who's walking up with confidence and who's walking up with a little bit of apprehension. Especially when you get to those sudden death PKs, and you have those guys that are that don't normally take PKs. You can tell who's going up with confidence and who's just hoping to put it in the net, and Wenger just didn't have the confidence as he walked up.
No, he did not. So Sporting Kansas City, third overall Open Cup championship, 2 and 3 seasons, and let's just say this right now. That might be 2 and 4 seasons, actually. I think I made a mistake on that because you won 2012. Yep, 2 and 4 seasons. I'm so hooked up on the 3 and 4 title things. I keep forgetting it's 2 and 4 seasons, actually, in the Open Cup. But you're heading back to the CONCACAF Champions League. How are you feeling about that?
I mean, it's the Champions League where I'm excited and apprehensive because, well, We've seen how the Champions League has done wonders for the other teams in that go into it in wearing them down with travel and everything. But I mean, I like the extra allocation money we're going to be getting. I'm sure that'll be put to good use. And the Champions League is always can always be fun and interesting. It gives a chance to see teams that you don't normally see, so I like it in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
The congestion part of it is obviously a bit of a worry for next season.
Yes.
But that's next season's worry at this point.
Absolutely. You still have an opportunity for the playoffs to clinch a playoff spot. And once again, that Western Conference, it's going to be a real tight race once again to finish off, and we'll see what happens. And CUNY, all I can say is congratulations once again. Open Cup champion, Sporting Kansas City. I have to say before I let you go, Peter Vermees went out in style, I would say, because, you know, Jim Curtin had all this time to talk about the loss, and here comes Vermees, quick, but cool. Oh, really? I don't have much time? Well, then I'm going to go back and spray.
I saw that last night. It made me laugh.
It was great. CUNY, thank you again. I appreciate it. Congratulations on the Open Cup Championship, and I will talk to you next time. Thank you very much.
Sounds good, Daniel. Talk to you then.
And that was Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline blog on Sporting Kansas City. Congratulations to him and everyone over at Sporting Kansas City. Now, let's talk about the whole situation with Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Union have sacked Nick Sakevich as their chief executive officer of the club. And it sounds like it's going to be a big shakeup now in Philadelphia. Obviously, they're not going to make the playoffs in MLS and league play. This is their second consecutive Open Cup final that they're hosting. And for the Philadelphia Union, I think this is a great move. And I'll tell you why I think it's a great move that they removed Nick Sakevich. Mr. Sakevich is a man that, let's be honest, this man is basically a guy that wants to desperately be loved by everyone. And when I say desperately, any hint of negativity, he will not so much it's called blocking it out, but he's going to throw executive orders to say, these people have no right to say what they're going to say about me. This man cannot handle negative criticism. This man cannot handle negativity aimed at him. How do I know this? Because back in the 2000 season, he ran the Metro Stars for a good couple of years when he had Octavio Zambrano as the head coach back in the day. And, you know, at that time, he's fighting to get a stadium done. He's trying to get a stadium deal done as much as possible. Now, look, I understand the whole 60 to 90 days rhetoric costed him. And I felt bad for him back in the day before I was even a blogger or a podcast host. I felt bad for him. And I showed my support to him because I said to Nick, listen, and this was after one of those games in the season where, you know, they had a post-match party at some place nearby. And I went, sat with him. I said, look, I understand it's a difficult process. It's a difficult situation back in the day to even get a deal done to build a soccer-specific stadium. Because at the time, let's be honest, you didn't have stadium deals popping up all over the place. And I understood that. I understood completely what he was going through. Not saying like I've done these type of things before, but because I knew the area. I knew the area. I knew how difficult it was because you had to convince these people building a soccer stadium in the United States at that time. And we're not talking about a couple of bleachers here and there in a field. We're talking about an actual working stadium for Major League Soccer professional club. That's what I'm talking about. I knew it was tough. And that's what we're talking about here. And this is why you get mad at Don Garber with the whole New York City FC situation. Because why? Simple. Very, very simple. Because it's going to take a lot longer to get a stadium deal done before you even bring the team. Fine, they're going to be at Yankee Stadium, but what happens if the New York Yankees decide to throw out NYCFC out of their stadium? You know what that means? It means that it's going to be a lot worse to find a stadium within the five boroughs. It's not that easy. Now, maybe today somewhere else it's a lot easier, but back in the day it wasn't that easy to build a stadium. So I supported Nick in that sense that I understood what he was going through. And it shouldn't have happened, but, you know, that's what it was back in the day. And then finally, when Red Bull Arena was going to be built, I went to Harrison, New Jersey by train. When I was living in Fairlawn, New Jersey, I took New Jersey Transit. I transferred to Newark, and then I took the PATH train from Newark to Harrison. I walked over there. It was a wonderful day. It was a wonderful day for me and everyone else that went there, and it was a happy day because finally this deal got done. Whether Nick was involved or not, this deal got done that Red Bull Arena was going to be built. Finally, our own soccer-specific stadium, our own professional soccer stadium. It didn't matter if it was in the five boroughs. It didn't matter if it was in northern New Jersey. The point was we have our own stadium. Just like you in Philadelphia, you should be happy you have your own stadium. And then here he comes walking onto the site, and I said to Nick, Nick, I hope you remember me, because I remember when you were trying to get this stadium deal done. I went up to him. I said, Nick, I hope you remember me, because I was in your corner. I know you were getting ridiculed back then with the 60 to 90 day thing. I'm proud of you. Congratulations. Great job. And what does he do with me? He just kept on walking. He doesn't say, oh, I remember you. I remember you supporting me and the whole thing. Yeah, no, thank you very much. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much. No, he looked at me like I was a nobody. And that's what he viewed MetroStars fans / Red Bull fans, now Union fans. Because if you went against Nick Sakevich, he would find a way to throw an executive order to ban you or to take away your signs that are negative towards him. This man cannot handle negative criticism towards him. And in my opinion, was the first sign of negativity on this Philadelphia Union club. In my opinion, Nick Sakevich did more harm than good. I understand the whole Peter Novak situation. It was a complete crazy time, and I think Novak also has a lot to be blamed for his own situation as well. But the truth of the matter is this, is that Nick Sakevich being released, being let go, sacked by Jay Sugarman and the Philadelphia Union, you know what? That's a great thing. That's a fantastic thing. Because unfortunately for Nick Sakevich, the man cannot handle criticism. The man cannot handle anything negative towards him. You can't brush it off. You can't let it roll down your back. It is, you will tell the Sons of Ben, any negative signs being lifted will be removed. Even if you sneak it in and the security catches you, they will be removed. So once again, as I've said, this is a great day if you're a Philadelphia Union supporter. Nick Sakevich is no longer the chief executive officer of the Philadelphia Union. Forget about the whole thing, what he did to force the Red Bulls to play the Open Cup match at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at Red Bull Arena so it wasn't a filled-up stadium. The truth of the matter is this. Nick did what he had to do to gain an advantage, to either force the Red Bulls to give up the match and have it being played at PPL Park, or to have them play it at 4 o'clock. He had to do what he had to do, and I understand all that, and that's fine. That's fine. I don't have a problem with it. But once again, as I've said, this man deserved to get fired for the way he treated the local supporters. I know, I've seen it happen when they used to be at Giant Stadium as the Metro Stars. And he deserved it, getting sacked here with how he treated Philadelphia Union fans and the Sons of Ben. That's the truth. He deserved it. And I'm glad for everyone in Philadelphia right now that he is no longer running the club, because he doesn't deserve it. The man truly does not deserve to run the club. But there you go. We'll see what Chris Albright will do. We'll see if they're going to hire someone else. Hopefully we'll have on Kevin Kincaid to discuss all this. As I've said already, he is unavailable today. He was supposed to join me today. This news broke. The rumors were out yesterday and the day before. Today, this afternoon, the news broke, and he had to go and cover it for Philadelphia, CBS in Philadelphia, I should say. So, you know, I don't blame you. But you know what, though? Once again, Philadelphia hosting an Open Cup final, and once again losing it in the final. Last year, it was in extra time they lost when they played the Sounders. They lost it in extra time. And this time around, the Union hosting the Open Cup final, losing it in the penalty kick shootout. I thought Maurice Adoo took his penalty horribly, and that just showed why. I don't know what happened. I don't know why he always thought to straight ahead and then bury it, because, you know, all you do is telegraph what you're going to do. And then, of course, Andrew Wenger steps up, and he converts his penalty with ease. I shouldn't say convert it. He got stopped by Melia, and boy, oh boy, I got to say, you just got to say, for Sporting Kansas City, great job. Great job by them in the penalty kick shootout. Tim Melia, great stop on Andrew Wenger to make that big victory by Jordan Quintilla, who converted his penalty to make it 7-6 on penalties for Sporting Kansas City after a 1-1 draw through regulation and after extra time. Now we're going to see what Philadelphia is going to do towards the offseason, because let's be honest right now, if the Union would have won the Open Cup Championship this past Wednesday night, that could have been a big, big, a big lift off the shoulders of everyone in Philadelphia, because, you know, they're in dead last in the East. They are in dead last in the East, and it's just one of those things where, my goodness, it's just one of those things where you wonder what the heck is going on. What is going on there? What is going on? It's just unbelievable. So all I can say is for Philadelphia, good luck next year in the Open Cup. Let's hope that we'll see what Philadelphia can do in the Open Cup next year. Truth of the matter is, let's see what Philadelphia Union can do with this roster right now, because at the moment it's a situation where I think they need a lot of help. They definitely need a lot of help. I just feel like for Philadelphia, you've made it this far twice in a row and you end up with nothing. It's just really, really tough, and it's really, really difficult. So all I can say is that let's just hope for Philadelphia next season, maybe you can finally do it. And all I can say is, it's just going to be really, really tough. Really, really tough to see what is going on. Because once again, it's a situation where you can't keep on going and assuming, you know, it's going to be a cakewalk again, because it's not. It's not going to be a cakewalk. The situation is going to be a lot more difficult on the third opportunity, and I don't think the Philadelphia Union, unless they change their roster, I don't think the Philadelphia Union is going to get back to another Open Cup final. A lot of issues going to happen. A lot of issues. And we'll see what they're going to do as they move on into next season for 2016. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just to say once again, another fabulous Open Cup tournament has come and gone. Very glad we are going to see some changes here, of course. Obviously, it's already happened for 2016. The qualifying will begin this month. For the first round, both legs in October on the 17th and 18th in the first leg. And then the second leg will be 24th and the 25th. And then the second round of qualifying will begin November 14th and the 15th in the first leg. November 21st and 22nd will be the second leg of the second round of qualifying for these amateur sides going. And then, of course, in April, on April the 2nd and the 3rd, third qualifying round will begin for the first leg. And then, I believe I'm looking here at the detailed final. I believe it might be a one match. I thought it would be a two match, but anyway, all I know is this: it could be a one match final. We'll have to wait and see when we get to next year, April 2016. But the first round of the 2016 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup will be played on Wednesday, May 11th. So that's the date tentative for the first round proper of the 2016 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Here are the clubs right now through the PDL and the NPSL that have qualified. Once again, first round is going to be 36 teams. 15 PDL clubs will be involved. 13 NPSL clubs will be involved. And then the two clubs per region, region 1, 2, 3, and 4, there'll be 8 altogether. So it'll be 36 clubs fighting to advance to the second round of the Lamar Hunt 2016 U.S. Open Cup. And it should be exciting. Here are the clubs that have qualified through the PDL first. The Southwest Division winner, Burlingame Dragons FC. The South Atlantic Division winner, Charlotte Eagles. Des Moines Menace from the Heartland Division winner, the Mountain Division winner, FC Tucson, the Northeast Division winner, GPS Portland Phoenix of Maine, Northwest Division winner, Kitsap Pumas, Great Lakes Division winner, the Michigan Bucks are back again, the Mid-South Division winner of Mississippi Brilia, the Mid-Atlantic Division winner, the New York Red Bulls under 23 side, the Southeast Division winner, the Ocala Stampede, and the 5 at-large berths given to these 5 PDL sides that are remaining: Jersey Express, the Long Island Rough Riders, Reading United, Seacoast United Phantoms, and Ventura County Fusion. The 13 National Premier Soccer League clubs that have advanced through the NPSL playoffs, and of course a couple of at-large berths given as well. First of all, the champions of the NPSL, the New York Cosmos B-side, the runners-up in the championship game, Chattanooga FC, Bill Elliott's side once again heading back to the Open Cup. That should be a lot of fun. Then the playoff semifinalist was CD Aglachuos, USA. The other playoff semifinalist was the Indiana Fire. The 4 playoff quarterfinalists, AFC Cleveland, welcome back. Welcome to the Open Cup. Clarkstown SC Eagles of New York State, so welcome to them. And they're in Rockland County, New York, not far from the Tappan Zee Bridge going to Westchester County and not far from New York City. Myrtle Beach Mutiny, Sacramento Gold. The 5 at-large berths are the Atlanta Silverbacks Reserves, FC Wichita, Fredericksburg FC, Miami Fusion FC, and the New York Athletic Club's men's soccer side. So congratulations to all these clubs in the PDL and the NPSL for making the 2016 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. I know I've already mentioned these games to you, these first-round qualifying games for the 2016 U.S. Open Cup, these amateur sides. Here we go real quickly once again. Let's go ahead and give you those matches. This will happen on October 17th, and this will be already divided with Region 1 and I also believe also Region 3. So, real quick, once again, hold on. So, here we are once again, October 17th. Southie FC taking on Battery. They're going to take on Battery Park Gunners, both from Massachusetts. Salone FC at Vereeniging Erzgebirge. They're both from Pennsylvania. Tartan Devils Oak Avalon of Pennsylvania at Aramis Cafe FC of Virginia. Newport FC Rhode Island at Worcester FC Massachusetts. West Chester United at Junior Lone Star FC. They're both from Pennsylvania. The New Jersey matchup, South Jersey Elite Barons at Jersey Shore Boca. Newtown Pride FC of Connecticut at Lansdowne Boys of New York in the Bronx. Boston Olympiacos at Global Premier Soccer Omens, and that's in Massachusetts. Maryland Bays at Dulles Sportsplex Agen Hawks, both from Maryland. The New York Pan Cyprian Freedoms at the New York Greek Americans, that are both from New York, at the Metropolitan Oval in Maastricht, New York, between Queens and Brooklyn. And that's going to be a battle against two former Open Cup champions. NTX Rayados at Austin, and this will be October 24th and the 25th. NTX Rayados at Austin Real Cuauhtemoc, both from Texas. Red Force FC at Uruguay Kendall FC, both from Florida. Colorado Rovers at Harpos FC, and that's both from Colorado. La Maquina at Strikers FC South Coast, and they're both at California. Chula Vista FC at Temecula Football Club, both from California. The KC Athletics of Kansas at International Portland Select of Oregon. San Nicolas FC California at Corinthians USA, also from California. Footballers Academy at San Pedro Monsters FC, both from California. Delray City SC at LA Wolves, and are both from California. Tobacco Road FC of North Carolina at CD Montagua of New Orleans, and they're from Louisiana. Davis Legacy at IFX Ballistic, and they're both from California. El Farolito at San Francisco City Football Club, both from California. Boca Raton Football Club at Real Miami Football Club of Football, and they're also both from Florida. Val United SC at Cal FC, and they're both from California. Outbreak FC at Buena Park FC, and they're both from California. Charlotte Sporting Soccer Academy FC at Queen City United FC, and they're both from North Carolina. Colorado Rush at FC Boulder, and yes, they're both from Colorado. And finally, Real Sociedad at Aussies Laguna FC, and they're both from California, Real Sociedad of California. And they'll be at East Los Angeles College, Monterey Park in California. So those are your first round qualifiers for the amateur teams going forward. So if you want me to speculate dates for rounds proper, I would say 1 through 3. I would say Wednesday, May 11th of 2016 is obviously round one proper. Wednesday, May 18th will be round two proper. And I believe on the 25th of Wednesday, which is also of May, which is also a Wednesday, that would be round three proper. Now, we're going to have to wait and see on the rest of the dates for the U.S. Open Cup due to the fact, of course, we still don't know about the Copa America Centenario being played in June. If it is going to be played in June, the best thing I would say for U.S. soccer, if you're still going to host it or you're still going to be a part of it, we'll see what happens, or if it's both. We're going to have to see what the schedule will be for that tournament. And once again, just to go back on that tournament that is going to be – it's still listed, I know, on FIFA's calendar. As we go ahead and take a look real quick – to see on the calendar of FIFA, if we ever believe their calendar anymore, go to 2016. Once again, in June, it will be on the 3rd of June to start, and then the 26th of June will be the final. That should be a Sunday. So once again, if we're going to take a look and see when there could be possible dates. Now, once again, it starts on the 3rd of June. So you'd say that's Group A matches. And there's going to be four groups of four. So you would say 3 through 6 is ABCD, 7 through 10 ABCD, 11, 12, let's just say for the heck of it, the 11th and the 12th will be same day games for two groups each. You could say the 13th and the 14th could be a fourth round matchup. Now, let's not forget we're going to have quarterfinals here, so it probably would be 17th and 18th for 17th and 18th for quarterfinals. Maybe the semis on the 22nd. Maybe on the 21st. We'll have to wait and see. But the 26th will be the final, which will be on Monday night. So you would definitely say fifth round will be on the 28th. Now, once again, this is only pure speculation on rounds 4 and 5. Or if you want to do round 4 in June, round 5 in July, as well as maybe the quarterfinals in July, that would be a better thing to do. And August would be the semifinals. Shall I say July would have fifth round and quarterfinals. July could have semifinals. September or October could be the final. But then again, once again, it's just tentative dates. I'm only speculating right now. I don't believe this is going to be permanent. We just have to wait and see what's going to happen down the road when U.S. Soccer will announce these dates. And, of course, we've already know round one proper will begin next year on May 11th. And I'm only speculating that the 18th of May, which is also a Wednesday, will be round two. And then round three will be May 25th in 2016. And then the rest is just pure speculation. So once again, this is just pure speculation on my part. It's not permanent. But at least we know, once again, round one proper will begin on Wednesday, May 11th. So once again, Sporting Kansas City / Kansas City Wizards, their third Open Cup championship, their second Open Cup championship in a four-year span, three titles in 4 years if you include the 2013 MLS Cup championship by Sporting Kansas City. So right now, you have to say congratulations to Peter Vermes and his coaching staff. Congratulations to Sporting Kansas City. Jim Curtin, you know what? I think we're seeing what Jim Curtin can do here. I think he can be an excellent head coach in this league. I think Jim Curtin right now is, if he can nurture a better roster and given a better opportunity to do better in the league, then I would say Jim Curtin would definitely be one of those top and rising young managers in this Open Cup tournament as well as in league seasons and beyond. And once again, Jim Curtin, no stranger to Open Cup championships. He shows why he loves the Open Cup. He's won a couple of Open Cup championships with the Chicago Fire back in his playing career. Good job by Jim Curtin. Good luck next year, of course, in the Open Cup, and hopefully everything will be a little bit better as we'll see what happens next year. And this will do it for the 2015 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Once again, unfortunately, we could not get Kevin Kincaid back on due to the news of Nick Sakevich's sacking. So he was unable to join me. He was supposed to come and join me. Unfortunately, these things happen when you work in the sports news business. And secondly, I want to thank Mike Kuhn of the Down the Byline blog for joining me. We're going to wrap up in a couple of weeks, of course, the CONCACAF Champions League. The MLS playoffs are almost upon us. We are in the final month of the regular season in Major League Soccer. But my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much. Get ready for that CONCACAF Cup for the Confederations Cup spot in CONCACAF for Russia 2017. Join me this coming Monday night. As always, please enjoy your football. Thank you again for listening to the 2015 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Final Review Show. Enjoy your football, everybody. I'll talk to you on Monday. Bye-bye for now.